So when's this next one coming out?
Well, in the next few weeks, we'll be ready. Like, because you're our fourth now, season two. So we've got two more.
Oh,
and then we'll just...
ping them out.
Yeah.
Get them out, mate. Get all of them out. It's how people do it more like that, don't they? Romesh does it as hip hop. He does like...
Oh,
he,
yeah. He'll his is like, huge, isn't it?
10. Yeah, but then, I mean, that's, I think, you know, it's such a weird thing of the things that break.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes you can have like three or four series or something of podcasts and you just get that one guest and it really takes off and everyone goes back and listens to the old ones.
Yeah, that's what you want, isn't
it? Yeah,
that's
the dream.
What's Jason's one that gets like fucking hundreds of thousands?
Is that Jason?
Jason and Joel's one, 150,000 downloads they get, on Rule of Three.
Oh, Rule of Three, I did that one,
Oh, did you? Talk
about the Wonder Years,
Oh my God, because I've listened to a few of them and yours is saved.
Oh yeah,
for me to listen to.
Yeah.
It's such a brilliant podcast.
It's a really good one.
I think it's fucking wonderful, but I find it mad how many, because I'm such a comedy geek. I could sit there and analyse comedy and talk about it and how things work for fucking hours. But I'm amazed that 150,000 other people are interested in listening to people do that. No, I'm not famous enough. I said to Jason, I was like, oh, when I'm famous enough, can I please come and do Rule of Three?
What would you do? Would you do Frasier?
Well, Miles Jupp did Frasier, which was wonderful.
Right.
I might have to do something Rick Mail. I don't know. I'll think about it.
Like,
I think
Bottom.
About, maybe Bottom or something, because I feel like he's really the reason I do comedy.
Yeah,
Rick
I worked
Mail.
With him before.
Did you?
Was that after he had his accident?
Yeah. Me and Morgana did. We just done Morgana show. She's amazing.
I'm obsessed with her.
And we did Comic Strip Presents. With
Rick. I loved Comic Strip.
Wait, you have to save this for the podcast.
No, I think we should keep all of this anyway.
Oh, should we?
And let's just do a... That was a soft intro for Smashing Sundays.
I may be working Monday night, and Tuesday might not be quite right, so come by Sunday.
The record button went on as soon as we got in here, and we got carried away eating almond bites, chatting about Rick Mail and all the podcasts that I'm not allowed on because I'm not famous enough.
So
I'm allowed on this one.
To our
this is Smashing Sundays, episode 4, possibly. Lucy, who have we got with us today?
We are so excited today to have the wonderful Tom Davis with us today.
Woohoo! Not that one. It's the actor one. Type in Tom Davis actor. There's a lot of them.
And there's one guy who's died. And
God.
He was a writer on Saturday Night Live, so he's like a Tom Davis comedian, and he wrote on loads of the films we'd have watched as kids. And when he passed away, loads of people were like calling my agent, asking for like a quote, thinking I'd died.
Oh my God.
And
must be so weird.
You know, as well, for a lot of time for press when I first started out, they used his picture.
Oh my God.
And he's like a 65-year-old man. And I was like, breaking new talent. And there was just this picture of this old guy who looks a bit like Steven Spielberg.
Breaking new talent.
Did you ever think about like giving yourself a stage name?
Like the David Walliams thing. That would be the temptation with something like Tom Davis, wouldn't it?
I think like big weirdly, so many, just now in this last sort of 2 years, probably Tom Davis, people would know more, but within the industry, everyone would just it was always Big Tom.
Big Tom.
Yeah. It was never, like, I don't think people knew my son. I wish I'd gone by that moniker.
Oh, everyone knows when I say, Big Tom Davis. Oh, yeah,
if you just say Tom Davis, who's that? You know, the big fella.
He is very big. I can confirm from the studio.
From being 5 foot
I'm 5 foot two and my neck aches from having a chat in the foyer.
What would I think you should have the stage name of Beth de Glanville.
Yeah, I tried it for a while. It did pretty well.
Didn't take, did it?
Didn't take.
When I started modelling, the photographer told me to call myself Lucinda Pinder.
Really?
Oh, my God.
I was like, no.
Nah.
It's not Babe Station, hun.
Well, it nearly was.
Only on weekends.
It is a bizarre thing of like how much your name can... I've got a friend who's a director. He's called Kieran Hawkes. And I was like, in any walk of life, he's
going to
be an incredible human being.
Yeah.
Kieran Hawkes. Tom Davis is so run-of-the-mill. It's not, you know, it's like, even when I remember, like, sitting watching, like, you know, when you're doing stand-up, the list of people, like, Sarah Pascoe is an incredible name.
That's a great
name. Even Catherine Ryan, Tom Davis is so flat. You've got to do so much more work.
You've got to be massive.
Yes.
Which you are, so that's fine.
But you're also, like, when they introduce you on stage and go, you know, ladies and gentlemen, Tom Davis, you could literally sometimes see people going, oh, I don't like the sound of this. This guy better be good.
Yeah.
Maybe he's not boring. Maybe like his name has made him even funnier. Because
you started with stand up, right?
Yeah, yeah. About 12 years ago, stand up was my, yeah. That was just literally, I'd been a scaffolder since I was sort of 15, 16, and I'd done other things. I was a chef and but I just wanted something to break the monotony of like turning up on a building site and listening to sort of, you know, that sort of chat. And I'd seen Billy Connolly, I'd read a book about him and become obsessed with Def Jam. And yeah. I just thought, I'm just going to give this a try. And yeah, and it sort of took off quite quickly, weirdly.
Great.
Sort of, yeah, it was, well, I say quickly, it was 12 years ago and I've just gone.
Like, but it probably feels like not that long in your life.
No, it as a... I think when you get older, time flies anyway. It does get deep. I think it seems like it's flown by. But when you look back, and I think like even Morgana Show was like the first sort of real TV thing I'd done. That was eight, 9 years ago.
God,
now.
I love the Morgana Show.
Yeah, she's incredible.
I'm just obsessed with her.
She's
you
like,
are, aren't you? You've got a real crush on her.
Such a girl crush on
she's
her.
She's a force of nature. She's like that was a really amazing time because she'd been like a waitress. I still work on building sites when we were putting that together. And then Terry Minot, who worked on it, was like a roadie. So we were all, none of us had come through the conventional Edinburgh and that sort of.
That's so
we're
great.
All quite sort of, you know, raw to it. And some of it, like when I look back now, I think we hadn't, you know, there's a lot to be said about Edinburgh, learning how to write, whatever, and getting stuff out there. We were quite like, oh shit, yeah, this seems funny. Let's just stick it out. So sometimes we weren't as schooled in the writing process as maybe we are now. But it was an amazing time. It was an amazing thing to be a part of.
So when did that journey happen then in terms of... Because I remember I started 12 years ago as well doing comedy sketches. And this first thing we got picked up by the BBC and I didn't have a clue what was going on. And they started telling us about writing structure and beats and stuff. And I was like, I don't know what is happening. I just thought that was funny. And they saw something in it that they liked. But you do have to learn it, don't you, at some point? And I remember like Ree Shearsmith and Steve Pemberton talking about how they sort of naturally wrote in a structure. And I don't think I did that. But you've got to learn it at some point, right?
You know what? I think genuinely, when we were doing the Morgana Show, the stuff that, like, when we did, like, Barry and Joyce, or we do, like, Hicks and stuff like that, it genuinely was James DeFond, who now directed Murder and Successful and directs King Gatta. We have the company together. A lot of the time, we were just messing around with stuff. And then Shane Allen was so supportive, and Neris Evans, and we'd find the funny in those things. And I think, you know, as unstructured at times as it was, it sort of the looseness of that sort of as me and more it suited me and Morgana as performers, but I think when it comes to later down the line and your structure and stuff, like for example, we were talking about Jason and Joel. So when we did Murder and Successful, they were like massive parts of Murder and Successful as writers. So and structurally, so as much as it was an improvised show, we had like amazing scripts. We had Jason and Joel, we had Matt Morgan, we had like really really strong writers across the board who would come in. And so that structure and the main thing is. It's learning from people.
Yeah, you've got to learn along the way. That God, that's an amazing team that you had on that.
Yeah.
And that was huge, wasn't it? Did you get a BAFTA for Murder and Successful?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Amazing.
Do you get told before?
No,
do you know?
No, no.
Were you just going blind?
I thought Taskmaster would win. I really, I'm not trying to be humble or anything. I thought it's a third series. It done well, but it was such a cult show.
Yeah.
In a world where, you know, we're all similar age, so when you look at cult show, when we were young, there was like five channels, and like Boosh was a cult show, but it was still a cult show on BBC Two. We were a cult show with, you know, sort of, you know, modern day entertainment, and I didn't genuinely think we were. My hardest thing of actually like winning that is my dad called me after, and he was like, you know, well done, da da da, and then he said, oh, David Attenborough wasn't having you though, and I was like, what do you mean? And then I watched it back, and when I get my BAFTA and I say at the end of it, from a boy from Croydon, this is pretty amazing, and it gets a nice response, and then you just see David Attenborough going like turning off his nose. Watch it back, it's a really amusing.
Yeah.
That is
like, and David Attenborough is like, obviously I'm a human being, a hero,
yeah,
and I'm like, Oh my God, David Attenborough.
Oh my God.
Do you want to
you
do a real like
now?
Larry David thing and just hound him until he just tells you? That's what I'd be turning up going, sorry, David, yeah, this is, and you're throwing your BAFTA in the thing. Go, no, it doesn't mean anything because David Attenborough isn't endorsing it. I'd be fucking hounding him. Why don't you like me?
That's so upsetting.
But also, so I'm sort of trying to find solace in the fact that did like someone fart near him.
Exactly.
And that was like, this lad seems nice. And then someone farts. He's like, oh, that's, you know.
He might have just got to text someone, send him a picture of someone throwing a plastic bottle in a river.
Or he's got a bunion and he's just sort of like caught it at a weird angle.
Yeah, exactly. That's what happened, Tom.
Or I always wonder in award shows if they edit certain reactions in that didn't happen at the time. Let's just say that someone thought it would be really funny.
Yeah. Someone just goes, you know what? It'd be great to ruin Tom Davis's illusion of David Attenborough.
You've
got that
so
bit
sad.
Where someone sneezed halfway through it. Yeah. It is.
Have you turned it into a GIF?
I don't know how to do it. I should do that.
Yeah, let's do it. I'm going to do it.
Because it's literally me at my proudest moment holding up a BAFTA and it goes to him going.
God.
It reminds me of like that Russell Brand had a bit about Bob Geldof saying about him at an awards thing, Russell Brand, what a cunt. And then he's oh my God, Bob Geldof was my hero growing up. Then he called me a cunt. It's like Father Christmas calling you a cunt.
Oh my God.
And it's such a good bit, but it is that. And you sort of open yourself up, don't you, to criticism on every level. Oh. Not that Attenborough's criticised you, but it's an insight into that wild...
Imagine
like,
that's the only time in his whole 90 years or whatever on this earth that he's ever used a C word. If he just turns to his wife or his son or whoever, he goes... What a cunt.
Oh, it's so horrid, isn't it? It's that thing of like,
maybe
that's why I
Croydon.
Never like, yeah, like you know, like, maybe you had a bad experience in Croydon, nothing to do with you.
It brought some PTSD for him, the mention of Croydon. Yeah. He was like, oh, shit.
He was rushed out after.
But it
the
is mad.
Of
the
meeting
of...
your heroes and them
or
either
them
hating
you.
Or, yeah,
yeah, if you're in the public eye, you do something and it's all very well members of the public going, oh, I think that's shit. And that's not nice either.
No.
But if it's somebody you really like and respect going, oh, God, isn't
I mean,
this
it's
shit?
Fair to say as well with David Attenborough, he's probably like the greatest human being on earth at the moment.
Yeah.
So that he thinks I'm a dickhead.
Yeah. Oh, I don't think he does. He can't do. But that is funny that reaction. David Attenborough won't have you, though.
I love your dad. Just went straight in.
Yeah, the one thing he took away from it.
Wow.
Like, when I got the belt, my cousin texted my mum and dad and said, oh, my God, how amazing. And my dad was like, what? And they're like, you know, Tom's just won a BAFTA. And he's like, oh, we're watching Springwatch. We were going to do it. Catch. I was like, that's fucking nominal. That's how little I said to him, I don't think I'm going to win. And that he was like... He did go down to bookies to put some money on, but they wouldn't let him put the bet on.
Why?
I think people could be rigged. I think they think the BAFTAs could be rigged.
Okay.
The Academy Awards you can, but you can't really put money on
the
BAFTAs for some reason. But
really?
Yeah. It's a really strange thing.
Maybe they are rigged.
I mean, but that's the thing. It's like...
Who judges it, though?
It's like a
panel
of independent people who... I sat on one of those panels for the
they're all wearing spider breeches.
Yeah.
That's an out-of-date reference for 2 months' time, probably. But, yeah, if anyone remembers the spider brooch and Boris Johnson didn't go to prison, that's when we're recording this.
Oh, let's stay out of
it. Oh, yeah, let's not even touch
on
that.
No, we can't ever talk about any stuff because we record it too far in advance sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say this could go out in 2 years and Brexit will still be going on.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we're all be wearing spider breeches.
Say, this could go out in 2 years' time and Boris Johnson would still be a cunt.
Exactly. Yay.
I don't think anyone's going to listen to this and go, oh, I don't remember Boris Johnson.
Yeah, can you imagine?
God, I don't remember that happening. Yeah, we've all been microdosed with LSD in the water system. No, none of us can remember it. That would be nice. So, Tom, we chat about Sundays a little bit on the podcast. You've just moved out of London. So, like, what do your Sundays look like now?
Sundays are everything, I think, now. When you move out of London, I've got to say, I do like a Sunday in London. I like the markets.
Yeah.
I do like a sort of bowl about that. But, living out in the country is incredible for that. My whole life is, like, you know, my wife, my dog. That's the best of a Sunday. Bit of a roast dinner somewhere.
Lush.
Little breakfast. Yeah. Taking a dog out. You've got a dog, right?
Yeah. And we're both quite lucky that we live in London, but like my family are in Winchester. So when it all gets a bit too much, it is lovely just to go and like be in Hampshire. You go back to Wales. It's Sundays are so different, aren't they? Kind of in the country or in the city.
I find the bustle of the city on a Sunday is like weirdly... It's not, it just feels that sort of you remember that London isn't just like a tourist attraction or a sort of commercial place that people live here.
Yeah.
So if you go to sort of, Notting Hill or whatever, and that's what I do, like that sort of the feeling of community from that. But I do, man, I wouldn't change being out in the country and a Sunday morning of, like, you know, the papers and taking it. I mean, I find other dog walkers can be tough.
Yeah.
Are you a fan of other dog walkers?
I don't mind other dog walk. This is going to sound really awful. I find people that are out walking without dogs a little bit odd.
Yes.
And they kind of like, if your dog goes near them, they're like, oh, and it's like, it's a Sunday, mate. Yeah, you're out walking. There are dogs. Where's your fucking dog?
Yeah, I do hate some of them. There's this one. So I look after two dogs 3 days a week and sometimes more holidays and whatever. And I'm absolutely, I've looked after them for years. Well, the new one is new and he's fucking mental.
I love him.
He chewed £200 worth of shoes yesterday in the owner's house. He's fucking mad. He's lovely, actually, but he is fucking mad. Anyway, I was out in the park the other day and this person's dog kept jumping up on me and the guy was like, oh, and I was like, I mean, mate, I've got somewhere to go after that. Like, I think ones that don't control their dogs.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I get like, God, I'm articulating this really well. Other dog owners, some are dicks, some are nice, basically.
I find the people walking without dogs, I don't think I ever went for a walk, like a walk when I didn't have a dog.
Same.
So I do. Like,
I look at, not in the woods and stuff, I look at someone like that and I'm like, what are you doing? And
it's, yeah. Where did you take drugs then? If you weren't walking in the woods?
Not just
when you were on your own on a Sunday.
And on a Sunday, just go down, pick up a load of coke and go, what are you up? You're off to anywhere today? I'm just going to hang out down the woods.
Mushrooms in the woods, though.
Oh, mushrooms.
No, I don't know. I grew up sort of in a seaside town. So we always, after the dog died or whatever, we still would always go and walk down the beach. Oh, it's a nice Sunday
a beach
walk.
A beach walk's different.
Is it?
Yeah.
I think a country field walk and you haven't got a dog.
Is weird.
It could be strange. Yeah. I think it's, you know.
Can everyone vote on this, please? Tweet us if you think it's weird.
A weird turnout.
That is funny. I've never thought of that. That actually, on a beach, don't judge anyone without a dog. In the woods.
Yeah.
100% weirdo.
Yeah.
Flashes.
I mean, that's an outdated thing now. What happened to flashes?
Well, now they send dick pics. They send unsolicited dick pics to people. I think they're flashes. I think, like, we get them, and it's, I don't think anyone that does it thinks we're going to go, oh, all right, hi, mate. Like, I'd love to sleep with you. I think they do it because they're the modern day flasher, and they get off on people just seeing their penis.
Oh, when I was a kid at school, there was a guy called Mushy who used to flash.
Mushy.
but it's like, I just, like, when that came out dated, it must have been a really tough thing of, like, flashing to someone and going, no one is doing that anymore. People are doing that.
When did the transition happen? Yeah. The tipping point?
Sort of like.
Where they were like, what can we do with this new technology? Imagine the dick pics with the iPhone 11, now that's out.
Yeah.
Or it'll probably be the iPhone 12 by the time this goes out. But those three lenses on the back of the iPhone.
Imagine
the dick pics with that.
The excitement.
I sounded excited then
you
about
them. You did sound really
excited. I'm not excited about dick pics. No, I don't want them.
It's the idea as well of a modern day flasher turning up at, like, an O2 shop, looking at those three cameras and going, I cannot wait to take a picture of my penis at this moment. She's very excited, sir. Yeah. Anything planned this afternoon? Oh, yes. Very big afternoon.
I might cut this from that and use it as a sketch, actually.
It's a strange thing. I didn't, like, with flashes, because they were everywhere.
When we were kids, there were loads of flashes. Yeah.
And it is weird, like, how times have changed.
Well, like,
we had Mushy, we had another local unknown, like, people didn't know his name.
Everyone had a local flasher. Yeah. Did you have, like, a local flasher?
No.
You used to hang down the wreck.
Yes, they always hang down the wreck.
Did you have one
in Pinar?
Let's have blocked it out. I'm going to text my mum. Who was the local flasher when I was younger?
She'll say Mike.
For a throwback Thursday post for my Instagram.
That'd be great if you had a picture.
Imagine if it was your dad.
Really nice.
If everyone thought your dad, so Beth's dad once, did he go swimming and someone stole his clothes?
Wonderful. Oh, can I just quickly tell this?
It's good. It is
sort of funnier if you know my dad, but I think it works. My dad's quite quick to temper. When I say quick, I mean very. Goes off at stuff. Loses his keys, 0 to 100. So fucking annoying, if you're listening. But it's quite funny when stuff goes wrong for him because of that. You're sort of willing it, you know, in a Basil Fawlty kind of way. Anyway, my dad used to go swimming every day and just swim for hours and hours. He'd just go. Anyway. So he drives down middle of winter, goes for a swim. Me, my mum, and her friend are sat in the local swimming pool. It's I can't stress to you enough. It's really icy, really cold, yeah. Right? We're sat around the kitchen table and the kitchen door's just ajar and we hear the front door slam and my dad just walked past with the door ajar in his Speedos. And we all sort of looked at each other like, did we just see that? And my mum, as we looked at each other, we turned around, my mum's friend's already on the floor laughing. My dad's shouting up in the house. Shouting. I was crying. I was like, what are you doing in your, what the hell are you doing here in your Speedos? Anyway, he'd gone for a swim, come out of the pool, put his clothes, taken his clothes out of the locker, put them on the side, goes to the shower, comes back, the clothes are gone.
Stole his clothes.
And he's like, right, come on, guys. And there was this group of boys, and he's like, boys, have you got my clothes? And they were like, no, mate, seriously. He's like, oh, for fuck's sake. So he walks out to reception in his Speedos. The receptionists are losing their shit because they know him because he goes there every day. And they're like, oh, Mike. And he's like, someone's taken my clothes. They couldn't stop laughing. He's like, oh, for fuck's sake, like storms off. Anyway, so then his car is the other side of the car park. He can't find anywhere to park outside my house. So he's driving and people are double taking as they're driving past this man in a little Fiesta in his Speedos in the middle of winter. So he's parked, literally he'd left the car in the middle of the road with the hazards on up the road because he was so furious. The leisure centre phone said this woman had brought them back. Her son had learning disabilities and he kept saying he found people's clothes.
So in the answer to your question, Mike is the Pinnarth flasher.
Yeah, exactly. So that's, it's my dad. We've revealed it. Oh, it was wonderful. It was absolutely
wonderful. The best
thing
about that story is when you first said it, I thought, oh, he went swimming in the sea. And someone hit him from the beach. It's such a big grift. And then I was like, oh, maybe just left him by the side of the pool. But he actually got him out of his locker. Yeah. And put them on the side.
Well, I thought, who's going to nick the... Well, you just don't think
I'd
about
never
it,
think
do you?
That. No. I do that all the time with clothes.
Yeah.
That's the worst, you know, like, where people ask for a picture of you. I was in the locker rooms at my local gym, and these kids came up, and they were probably about 13, 14, and they said, oh, is it all right if we get... And I just got out of the pool, and I was in some trunks.
Oh, my God.
And they're like, can we get a picture with you? And I'm like...
In trunks?
You with a load of kids?
Yeah, I was like...
Oh, my God. Oh,
I'm just going to put some clothes on first. And I went, oh, no, we just got to go, because we're all going.
Oh,
I was
my
like,
God.
Yeah, you know what? Can we just do it another time? And they're like, why? I was like... Well, it's just, you know, let me just, you know, wrap a towel around me and put a t-shirt on.
Because this is
like,
wildly inappropriate.
Oh, my God.
Sort of standing, like, dripping wet with, like...
People are funny, aren't they?
I know, but I was like, you know, it's sort of, it's such a strange... I find that a strange thing that people take pictures of... I think, what do you do with those pictures? I had one picture of me and a celebrity when I was a kid. It was a picture of me and Frank Bruno. And that
Amazing.
Was my whole life.
I had one with Matt Letizia, queued up.
Oh, really?
Yeah, queued up when I was 12, I think.
Are you a big Southampton fan?
Yeah, well, I was big. I still, yeah. I love football. I'm not that up on the Premier League anymore, but still a Saints fan. Yeah. But we loved him. We queued up at
I love Timmy Mallett.
I am. Timmy Mallett was,
Wait to have your world shook.
Oh, he was a guest at Freshers Week at uni, so I queued. I threw away the disposable camera with the picture of me and Timmy Mallett on it because he was such a cunt.
Really?
So
Timmy
I
Mallett
loved
was...
Whackaday when I was younger.
Yeah.
I was obsessed.
Who didn't?
I used to wear plasters on my chin. Like, I was obsessed with it.
You used to wear plasters?
And
shit.
Mallett's Mallett. Like, I'm a really huge fan.
Yeah.
It was massive.
Got quite an obsessive personality anyway, but like really loved him. My mum said she always thought he was a bit of a dick, but she was like, you liked it.
Anyway, he's sinister.
So I queued up, whatever, and I had a photo with him, and he's like, oh, yeah, great, thanks. And I went, sorry, can I just say, I was such a massive fan. And as I started to say what a big fan I was after I'd had the photo, he went, yeah, all right, love, you've had your photo, fuck off.
Oh,
and I literally, my face, I wish my mate Reg had got the picture of my face when he said that, because that would have been a picture to develop.
Can we tell your other story or not? Can we just not mention who it was? No.
Which one?
Which one? The best story in the world.
Oh, be as dirty as you like.
Yeah.
Oh my God, this that wasn't Timmy Mallett.
No, it
maybe
wasn't.
We'll save that one.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, Matt, I'm not sure if I'll get done. Well, I shouldn't get done because I didn't say it. But a game show host once propositioned me via their PA,
and said
that he's waiting for you in the chairman's suite, be as dirty as you like.
Oh, my Lord.
After I'd not.
That's such a big look, isn't it? I mean, that's...
I was like, sorry?
Yeah.
And I turned around, my friend's face. I went, I'm so glad someone else heard that. I said, oh, I'd actually just
wanted
a photo with him.
I'd genuinely gone out, found a field, just rolled in it, covered myself in mud and
spent
it. turned up and going, is this filthy enough for you?
Yeah, exactly. I know. I was filming Gavin and Stacey at the time, and Joe Page went, oh, I wish you'd gone in there. I wonder what he would have wanted you to do. Right, do you think he wanted you to piss on him or something? I was like, oh, God, I don't know.
But, oh, yeah. God.
But that's yeah, don't meet your heroes. Well, don't have photos with your heroes.
Matt Letizia was lovely.
I went to Prague with Matt Letizia.
Did
Because I filmed loads of stuff for Southampton a couple of years ago. And he's like one of the genuine most lovely men. And I'm a massive football fan. And we went to Prague. But the weird thing, so we went to Prague and we went out, I think it was Adidas or Under Armour had paid for us to go out and shoot these sketches. And he was like a... They were like, you know, whatever you guys want, it puts in a nice hotel, we're there for 3 days. And it was like all food and drink. But he doesn't drink anything we've got apart from Malibu and Coke. And to try and
oh,
find
so that a classic yeah, Matt Letizia. You know,
like, proper, like walking around and I always remember just eating like a really chocolatey crepe with him. And it sort of like being around his mouth where he's really like scoffing back his banana. And you know, like you're sort of like, oh, like, he's such a hero of mine. And it feels like such a weird thing to go, oh, you know, he's like, you know, chatting about something quite serious, something like football or whatever, and how it's changed. And and I was really wanting to go, mate, your face. And it was like covered on his face.
That's amazing.
Yeah, he's a lovely man.
He's such a nice man. Yeah. Well, he was when I met him when I was 12.
I mean, I did get a message from his PA to go to his room and be as dirty as I like.
That's in the chair this week.
Oh, God.
Was it the chairman's suite?
Yeah, it was in a conservative club. So, you know, they have different rooms, like the men's bar, the chairman's suite,
the
lounge.
How do you even have that conversation with your PA?
It was astonishing. And I was about 24 at the time.
And what was he at the time? About 65?
Yeah, I mean, we are narrowing it down now. People are going to be... People are there going, like, playing... They're going,
bingo.
Bob Holness? No, I think he passed away. it wasn't Bob Holness. Yeah, he was a lot older than me.
Yeah.
And I just love the thought still, of you going, I just wanted a picture.
Well, I'd only asked for it. I had my disposable camera. Now I just sound like somebody who walks around with a disposable camera trying to get pictures of celebrities. I don't.
80 celebrities.
What I was going to say is I think there is kind of something. You know, we've all had an autograph book when we were younger that didn't ever get filled.
Yeah.
But like, there is something quite nice about having a photo. When you've met someone, you go, oh, there's a photo with.
But I think like a hard copy is so much nicer.
Yeah, it is.
Because I just think now. I don't think anything's kind of that sacred. Like the autograph book is like, I remember getting sort of an Frank Bruno, whoever his autograph as a kid, and then getting a book, you know, for it and thinking, this will be Phillips. And like, everyone of our generation will have like maybe three.
Yeah.
And then you're sort of literally getting your dad to sign it. Trying to fill these pages.
Forging signatures.
Actually, the worst one, actually, of kids with celebrities, I went to quite a rough school and, how our RE teacher had spent like ages. He was one of those things, like kids. Do you remember a film called Nicky Cruz? And it was like, God loves you, Nicky Cruz. It was like, how do I make these kids better? And sort of, so he was like, sort of like constantly, like, I believe all of you can achieve whatever you want. Doesn't worry about where you're from and all this. And he was a really sweet guy. And he lobbied for years and he got Cliff Richard to come to our school, right? And he was sort of like,
for better or worse,
all the kids in the assembly. And he's like, he came on stage and he was like, oh, you know, boys and girls, I really want you to give a massive round of applause. Cliff Richard's here. He's going to say some beautiful words and he's going to sing some songs. Go crazy for Cliff Richard. Cliff Richard came walking on stage. He gets the microphone to start talking. And one of the bigger kids turns around and goes, Richard, you wanker.
Oh, no.
And then Cliff Richard just goes, and then someone else just goes, wanker! And it was the most mortifying thing.
Oh, imagine being that teacher.
And then,
imagine being the head teacher. Imagine, did you get the bollocking of a lifetime
school? And everyone, and because obviously no one wanted to sort of dob someone in. And then he tried to sort of sing, remember, from a distance, the world looks blue.
Sorry, he went into that after he'd been heckled.
Yeah, it was pretty barbaric that he was singing to, I mean, I think contractually he felt he should, and maybe that would, you know. And like, kids were just shouting out throughout the whole song. And you know, this is
that
a sad
is
thing.
Shocking.
And like, at odds with my sort of my look and how I was a really big Cliff Richard fan. I was like, genuinely, sitting there going, oh, God. Trying to laugh along, but thinking
love
I was.
You.
This should have been better than
that's
it would be.
Yeah.
Was he in your autograph book?
No. He made a pretty quick exit to me.
Could you sign it to Wanker, please? Yeah. Do tell him, love Wanker.
One kid, just me. I was about 6'5" at the age of 12, so I was just that one dorky kid. Yeah, no.
Was it a rough school then? Because I went to a rough school, but Jesus, I can't imagine people doing that.
Yeah, no, it was pretty. It was also at that time, I think, when, yeah, I guess. You sort of go, but it was they'd sent David Mellor and people to the school to sort of like, you know, try and sort of like, you know,
we had no celebs at our school.
That was the first time I was on TV.
We had a couple of priests.
My ear was on the news because the school was on the news, so it was, and it was like my ear basically was David Mellor, and my mum was like, look at your ear, it's definitely, yeah, and I was taller than him, so it was like really gangly, spotty kid. But yeah, it was sort of. Yeah,
being in London, that is a thing you're more likely to get, I think,
yeah,
as well. Is,
well, it was just sort of
celebs
outside,
able
so
to come to schools.
When I said to Romesh where it was, and Romesh taught there years later, and he was like, oh my God, that is, yeah.
Of course, because he was a teacher, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's the worst school I ever taught at.
I teach in some schools where I walk out and I go, ooh, don't think I'll be going back there again.
Yeah.
Who would you want to bring in as a drama teacher? DiCaprio.
I'd be an awful teacher.
So who would I want to bring in to inspire the kids?
Yeah. If DiCaprio's busy. And Tom Davis is busy.
I'll go Idris.
Oh, God, yeah.
Idris has got, like, the Moxins is an amazing actor.
No one's going to be shouting wanker at Idris.
No one is. Yeah, Idris
so
Elba.
So beautiful, isn't he?
Yeah.
She's gone all glazy-eyed.
He's so lush. He's so lush.
He's like, yeah.
That would be the, if he had been Bond, that would be the only way you'd get me to watch a Bond film.
I don't know why, I can't for a reason see why they wouldn't have just made that call.
So weird, like he's just like,
do you think he turned
he's
it
so
down?
Sexy.
No, I don't know.
He's such like, everyone's like, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
he's
my
got
God,
everything,
yeah.
He's got the sort of like, the
he's,
humour
has
to
got
it.
Everything.
Because I'm sort of a bit done with Bond as a, like, just the seriousness of it all now. I just used to like it when I had a little bit of like.
Yeah.
I mean, it's for. Because basically, the only way. I'd love to see a Bond where, like, Me Too and his actual treatment of women is brought forth before.
that'd be amazing, wouldn't it?
Like Judi Dench calling him and going, what have
we got
here? Big mission. She's like, actually, no, we have a pretty serious complaint.
You keep fucking women and they keep dying.
It's not like I'm flushing or anything. No, but you have said a couple of things.
You're either a serial sex offender or a serial killer.
Both, possibly both.
Yeah, it is such a fucking thing that surely the memo would go round when like two or three women have died after.
So weird.
It's like everyone
that sleeps with this man dies. Maybe he's not going to have as much luck with the women as he used to.
It should be something that's sort of like, it's literally like with your first day at fucking MI5. All the stationery's in there. We do like a really nice Christmas, but oh, don't fuck James Bond.
If he asks you to be as dirty as you like, don't do it.
Why is James Bond sitting up in the chairman's suite?
Do not go.
Well, it's up in Marlborough Light and just sits there and waits.
If it was Idris Elba, then I would be as
If it was Idris Elba, I'd have been in there.
Yeah, yeah. Fucking hell. So, Sunday with Idris Elba.
Yeah.
That's where we got to. Nice.
James Bond was a Sunday movie, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
As kids. That was Sean Connery.
I don't think
if
I
you're
ever
a boy,
watched...
I'm not into Bond, but yeah, it's I appreciate it.
I don't think I ever
movie.
Watched a Bond all the way through until a few years ago. Like, they always used to be on.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, it ain't my thing.
Sunday movies are the Sunday. Like, that's now we're, or depending on when this is going out, which everyone seems to be saying. But Sunday movies, when the sort of weather and the days get a little bit shorter.
Oh, it'll definitely still be winter when this goes out, don't worry.
It'll be summer.
My sad lamp will be well and truly on and warmed up by the time this goes out.
That'd be a good name for the guy in the chairman suite. Sad lamp.
Sad lamp.
That can be his like sad lamp. Code name.
But yeah, I like a Sunday film. Sunday
I love
film
an is, 80s.
Any 80s. Like a Trains
Road
Planes.
Trip. Yeah.
Like something like that. Or a Pixar.
Yeah.
I could watch Toy Story. Although, yeah, I love that.
The Toy Story is great.
Just that sort of chilledness of like a big roast dinner. Because I like to cook on a Sunday.
So a country walk. So we always ask people kind of what it, at the present time, would be your perfect Sunday.
That, yeah, I think that would be it, like a walk with the dog. Hopefully not seeing any idiots when I'm out. Then get back and then just start a big Sunday lunch. And then
sit on the couch.
Football sometimes. It's sort of...
It throws me a bit when football's on a Sunday.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because you're Saturday. Yeah. You like the Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird thing of, I think, my wife and me have just got to an understanding now. Well, because before, when I was single, before I was married, my Sundays were pretty much Sunday league football that I play in the mornings, and then you just spend a whole day in a pub. Sundays is like a massive thing as well, because I worked on a building site, so I'd usually work 6 days of a week. So a Sunday was, yeah, you play football with the lads, and then you're straight down to the pub, and you'd spend the whole, you know, you'd be in a pub till like 10 o'clock at night. You know, it was a big drinking day.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be more different now. I'm just probably about 3 years away from going to church. I wonder as well as who's going to go. Churches are like not what they were at all, right? They're not half as busy as they used to. You know,
no, I guess I haven't been in one for a long time, but I had a Catholic upbringing. So yeah, I was in church, for years.
And maybe it's because I'm not myself that way inclined now, but
same.
It doesn't seem like Catholics, like, did you do Sunday school and stuff like mm-hmm. that? Yeah. So that was such a big thing as a kid. It just feels like now, will churches just be sort of like not even used in like...
Yeah, my grandparents still go and they've got like a pretty busy church community, but then they live in Cornwall where everybody's older. lots of people are older down there. So I do think it's a generational thing. Like, I don't know any of my peers. Yeah, I don't know anyone my age that goes to church on a Sunday.
Give it 10 years, they'll all be coffee shop.
Well, maybe, hopefully. Or do we start shitting ourselves in 10 years going, well, I might give church a go just in case.
I think the damage is done.
Yeah. No, you're right.
But none of our generation, I can't tell you anyone I know, even like sort of like friends of friends who go.
I don't. The only friends I've got that ever go to church are just to get their kids into school.
Or if they want to get married in a church. My mate texted me saying, do I want to come back for her daughter's christening? And I was like, going back to church, are you, hun? And she was like, oh, well, no, you know, it's just something you do, isn't it? I was like, I don't think so. I had kids, which is looking increasingly likely as the weeks, unlikely as the weeks go on. I don't think I'd christen. No, I definitely wouldn't christen them.
I'm an atheist. I wouldn't. I love the history of the church and the songs, the stories.
We talked about this with John Holmes. Yeah, love incense, love a hymn.
Yeah, I also think
love an altar boy.
When you go,
oh, steady.
It's all right if I say it.
Is it?
I don't think it is. A 35-year-old woman.
Not kids. There's older ones.
How old are you going to be as an altar boy if you're 32
my mind went then, when I was in church, there were a couple I really fancied who I guess I was, so I'm probably like 15, and there was a couple of 18-year-old ones with like long hair.
Yeah, but that's like if I turned around and said, God, I still fancy girls who play netball. Like,
yeah, that's exactly.
It's like literally, you're
like, Dave, can you edit that out, please? 14-year-old me, 15-year-old me, fancying 18-year-old altar boys was fine. I take it back. I retract that statement. I do not fancy altar boys anymore.
I find with churches, my favourite thing is the fact that people who would have started building it would never have seen it finished.
That's mad. As mortgages will be now. Yeah. Start paying a mortgage and then your great-grandchildren will still be paying it.
It's mad to think that you'd have laid the first brick and had to just picture how it would be. Like, I went to Seville. We went to, last Christmas, me and my wife went to Seville for a couple of days. And then you go to the church, whatever, the cathedral there, and you think, fucking hell, like, this is incredible. But imagine just, like, getting halfway up and then dying and then just, like, literally...
Dying up there, probably.
Yeah, falling off
scaffolding. What? They didn't have your scaffolding.
My scaffolding was, I was a terrible scaffold.
Were you?
I was awful. I mean, I say I was a scaffold. I was a labourer at best. I was awful. Yeah.
How can you be awful at it? Did loads of people just keep falling off?
No. I was genuinely really just used for carrying stuff.
Right. Okay.
I was pretty much like, sort of what a donkey would be, or sort of like, literally they would be like, I was pretty strong. So that was it. But I wasn't technically a good scaffolder.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Didn't fall off though.
I did actually.
Did you?
I broke a few ribs.
Oh my God, my dad did this. So my ex, he was a carpenter and builder, and my dad, he was like, oh, do you want to like come and do a bit of labouring?
And my dad,
quite accident prone. I went, no, mate, don't. And he got really offended. He was like, I'm fine. Yeah, no, I will. I will do a couple of days labouring. Thank you very much. I was upstairs, just heard him come through the door talking like that. And I was like, I fucking knew it. I came downstairs. He was like, yep, step backwards, fell down a hole, cracked all his ribs.
Yes. Oh, I love it.
I know. And I was like, well, I don't want to be, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But it, I did say.
It is. I was like that. I was really accident prone. Like, and also quite... So we do this a bit of sinking galley. So I started wearing glasses on set. I was like the first person there to wear glasses, and people were just like, "Oh, you know, oh my god, what are you gonna do? Read a book at lunch?" And
you're
like, and then like genuine. And if you read anything but the sort of sport, you were considered like, you know, fucking hell, you know.
Yeah, my ex used to get over there. He used to read a lot, and he was a Tyler and whatever. Yeah, and if he was like, Beth, I literally get the piss taken out of me for reading a book.
Yeah,
that worked. Like, if it's not the sun, it's like, what the fuck are you doing?
Quite aggressive, yeah. And weirdly, so when I start stand up, and people would be like, "Oh, you're not scared of the crowds or something?" Well, not, but my everyday life is pretty fucking.
Yeah.
And I remember because I got I remember getting a metal splinter in my hand, and then my mum was a nurse, so I'd phone my mum and said, "Oh, I've got a metal splinter. You got to be careful with them. Can go septic." So I was like, "I'm just going to go down to the hospital and see about this." And it was a tiny little splinter. Like, the guys were just like, "Fucking hell, mate. You're not right, mate. You're not right." Like, genuinely, you know, just like rinse. Probably for about 3 years, that was all.
Oh, my God.
Because when you work with people all the time like that, the smallest thing becomes, that will just
stick. That's your personality, yeah.
That's the thing you remember for.
Yeah.
Yeah. And remember YSL was massive. And I remember spending a lot of money buying a YSL jumper, like for our Christmas do, thinking, oh, it's going to be amazing when I turn up in this. Everyone's going to be really. And I turned up thinking I was a bollocks, like bowled in, and a pair of Patrick Cox shoes, little bit of Levi's, and this geezer turns around and went, "You know what YSL stands for?" And I was like, "What?" "You sad loser." And I was like, "Oh, really?"
Oh.
And then that was like, everyone's just cheering, "You sad loser," for that, yeah.
Tom, who's laughing now? Me feel sick. That's actually really upset
me. No, but
it
is that thing of like, because it's, you know, like now we're, you know, not to sort of, but you, where we talk now about sort of mental health and, you know, and Ashley B's like a really close friend. I spoke to her about it, but it's like that weird thing you'd never then admit. You could have friends, like my dad was saying about the other day. So this is going back to dogs. My dog has anxiety. He's like, he gets really panicked by large sounds and stuff. And he had a bit of a bad experience with a vet. So my wife is like incredible with him, and my wife is like, you know, sort of like trying to sort of build his confidence. And we got this woman to come out and talk to him like a dog whisperer type thing. And my dad came up to stay, and I was like, "Oh yeah, yeah, da, da, da. Monday, make yourself scarce, you know, go down, get a sort of coffee, because Landis's dog whisperer's coming round." He went, "A fucking dog whisperer?" And I was like, yeah. And he went, "Jesus Christ, even your dog's going through psychology stuff now." He went, "There used to be a time as a man where shit went wrong. You'd punch a wall, have a couple of Stellas, and you'd just get over it." He went, "I knew a bloke who his wife left him."
Not dogs, though. They couldn't have a couple of Stellas and punch a wall.
He's from a different generation. Yeah. And now we talk, and I'm constantly like, you need to have that conversation. You need to talk about stuff.
It's so funny, isn't it? And I know it's like that generational thing, but they get so angry, and it's like, why are you so angry that people are just trying to be?
Well, you talk about your dad, and there's how angry he is. And even my dad is a pretty, he's a pretty well-rounded and pretty, he's not an arse, but it's a different generation of having those conversations.
Yeah.
And me and my friends do have those conversations. We make sure we do. But like, if you 20 years ago walked into a pub and going, "You know what, I'm feeling a bit down, actually, shit's getting to me a bit," you'd have been absolutely, even if on a building site I got to work and gone, "You know, I'm really feeling blue," people would look at me and literally probably after about an hour, people would be like, "You're going to go and get a cut of teeth, you're going to cry." You know what I mean? Yeah, it would have been that thing. Yeah. You know? And now, you know, that conversation's happening. It's an amazing thing to be doing. But it's still, I look at that sort of upbringing and you think, you know, and the size of it where I think that sort of hardness helps you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was always, always the guy who probably would walk on set and say, "Oh, you know, I'm feeling a bit down in the top." Usually because I'm bad that happened on Dawson's Creek. But
Yeah, it's so important that changes.
And I think it is. I feel like it is.
Yeah, it is.
But it's also, the big thing is, it's happening within the environment. It's very easy to think that we all live in a bit of a bubble. Mm. You know, all three of us work in this industry. Even all three of us are probably from sort of, I'd imagine, relatively working to middle class backgrounds. But actually, outside that bubble, are those conversations being had? And also outside London, as silly as it sounds, you go to sort of small, more provincial places. Is that happening? Like, you come from a small place in Wales. It's like, those small villages, those small places where people do get your needs. That's the other thing about moving to Stanford. You're there and you're like, shit, that's such a small place.
Yeah.
We were talking about this because I think we both separately had a couple of kind of friends or acquaintances kind of making comments about kind of like, oh, well, feminism, well, everything's all right for women now, isn't it? And you go, oh, wow, is it?
Wow, like, cool.
Okay, in your kind of, in your bubble maybe, but yeah.
And also probably in their bubble, it's really not. It's like, that's also the other thing of like, it's like anything, it's like to implement change, it's not like an easy fix. No. It's like, I was at a thing yesterday talking about like BAME talent and within television. It's like, and it's like, I'll tell you actually a really good example is homelessness, right? Mm. Yeah, in probably about a month, all of us are going to be talking about homelessness because it's going to be cold and it's going to be wet and it's going to be shit. But in the summer, it's like, oh, it's not really a problem in the summer. Mm. Well, it fucking is. It's a problem for 12.
We're all sitting on the pavement drinking beer in the summer, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, I love being outside in the summer. Yeah. It's like, no, that's not. Yeah. And it is a thing of, and all of it is the same. It's like you have to be conscious that all of, I suppose it's just trying to be a sort of better person all around and trying to, I guess, sort of work out other people's shtick, where they're coming from.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing.
Yeah. Homelessness is... Yeah, I find it the most upsetting thing day to day that I see, because it's, and I really know, I went to Berlin in August, humble brag, and it was really notable the lack of homeless people I saw. Yeah. I saw about 4 homeless people all week.
Yeah.
And there was a couple of people under bridges sort of with setups, like a mattress and like a bedside table and stuff, who were clearly like had a place there. But when I went to Cardiff recently, just that so many. Yeah. It's fucking devastating. And I don't know how people can't make the connection with, what's happening in politics, with what they're seeing. I mean,
nobody, the amount of
people lie to you and go,
terrible.
Oh, but unemployment's at an all-time low. It's like, mate, I'm literally, don't fucking tell me things are good. Like the pigs telling the starving pigs have never had it so good. It's like, I can see how shit things are. Like, and winter really ramps
that up. But isn't it
up.
Mad the way that we do kind of... Like my sister, when she said it's weird that even like us three who are aware of it and are kind of bothered by it, but we all just kind of accept it. Like my sister said, she was walking to work one day in Winchester and it was freezing. And she went, I don't know why, but just on that particular day, she was like, we are stepping over somebody to get to work.
Oh, it's hideous.
Who's been sleeping on the floor.
And also it's even now where you think you could, like, so where... Like, I live in Stamford, but around the corner is Peterborough, and Peterborough's biggest employer was Thomas Cook.
Wow.
But Thomas Cook's now, it's like 1,900 jobs there. And so you think, but you also, you're privy to the fact that it's not like of our parents' generation, that basically now people, like, pretty much are living month to month.
Mm.
So you're only a month away from and if you haven't got, like, that network of family or friends or people you can... potentially go and stay with you. It's a really tough place.
We always say that. We're just like, we're really lucky to have like the families we've got. Like you and I would never not have a house to sleep in. Some people have no one. And what do you do if you've got no money?
As well, my mum and dad are still a month to month.
Yeah.
You know, like they own a house, but they're still...
Yeah.
They pay a mortgage.
Yeah.
So if anything happened to their jobs even... Yeah. Do you know how long we're really not that far away from being fucked? And I think the closer you are to that,
I think
more likely you are to empathise.
And I think,
if you're Jacob Rees-Mogg, it's easier to step over someone in the street because it's their fault
and
that they're there.
And somebody relishes that. I mean, I was affected, the last recession, big recession, end of 2008, 2009, I was working as a scaffolder then and work just dried up. You're like, and you... sort of a decent, you got to think in 1996 when Blair came in, I was 16, 17, and it was a real, it was an amazing time. So London was the fastest growing city in the world. It was like an incredible time to sort of to work in the building industry. And then sort of, you know, I think we saw basically two recessions. And you realise then, you're like, shit, man, like going to a pub on a Friday, having this basically like Boys from the Black Stuff type thing going, you know, anyone got any work for Monday?
Yeah.
It's that's where you're like, shit, man. And that's how close it is. So I sort of, you know, you feel very lucky and blessed that I do this, but you know how tough it is out there. It's a really, yeah, it's a hard place to be. And that's why, Jacob Rees-Mogg and all that, you're just like, you have no idea. I think that's the problem.
I think we were saying this, weren't we? We were like, is it more terrifying that they just have no idea, or is it more terrifying if they do and don't give a shit? I don't know which is
Frankie
more...
Frankie Boyle did a really good tweet the other day, sort of saying, like, don't think that they don't know the consequences of what they do. So I hate when I start to quote something and I don't remember it. But basically, you know, if you cut police, what's going to happen.
Yeah.
If you stop people's benefits, you know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
On paper, they know. I think that Dean Burnett has this book called The Idiot Brain. He's a comedy writer and a neuroscientist. It's really good. But he's like, the further away you are from something, the physically less able you are to empathise. Mm-hmm. So there is absolutely that. Like Ian Duncan Smith saying he can live on £53 a week. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
And it's not that kills you. It's the lack of hope that kills you, you know? So I think they so far removed, they can't empathise. But also they know the impact their decisions are having.
Yeah.
And they can't care. They obviously don't care. They know. They're not stupid. They know that what's going to happen when they implement these policies.
Yeah. And also worse than lack of hope is giving hope. With no heart, you know, that's essentially what was handed out, you know, when it came to that vote. And it's essentially what one Brexit and one Trump was going to places where, you know, there were sort of like, you know, prosperity had gone. You know, you think, you know, you have only got to go off, you know, Sheffield or, you know, these places that were powerhouses of industry, and they've gone now. And you give, for the first time, you turn around and say, oh, actually, we might bring that back. That might be coming back. We can do that for you.
Mm.
And that you give someone hope. And that's bigger than anything. But then to take that away after, it's a pretty shambolic. And that's the other problem with it. It's very easy to for anyone to sort of turn around and say, oh, you know, not if they voted for Brexit, they're an idiot. But then if you go and talk to a lot of these people in these places, and I'm not talking about a generation of older people, I'm talking about people from very sort of like working class areas, their thing was like, we believe that things might get better. Mm. And if you've not had that for almost, you know, I'm 40 now, and I remember being of an age where kids from my school, their dads were going up, they were policemen, and they were going up to you know, with the miner strikes and everything. So you think, like, in all of their working lives, that industry's been taken away, and you know, and that's hard. So if you're told, like, oh, actually, we might bring it back, that's a shocking thing, and that's the thing that I think you have to try and understand. It's not because as much as we can throw sort of whatever at Rees-Mogg or Johnson or anyone involved in that, it's not fair to then do it to people who did believe in something. I think that's it was quite very deep.
I agree.
Got very deep.
Yeah, for a Sunday chat.
Yeah, no, I agree.
That's what I like to do on a Sunday, chat about Brexit.
I think that is what a lot of people are doing on a Sunday.
Well, the papers come out.
It's a fucking mad time
we're living in at the moment. So
it
would be weird to not acknowledge it and talk about it. Because again, we don't know, this will go out in a few weeks and Lord knows what will have happened. Because every time something else happens, you just think.
But don't you feel like I'm getting to the stage where I'm like, there's loads happening, but actually nothing's happening.
No, I think that's the thing as well. But it's also modern day news, isn't it? So on a
Sunday,
that is a weird thing that you take a lot of that in. Like, it's a what I you know, for like you guys, I have a busy life and you sort of end up, sometimes things pass you by, and you'll sit. It was the only day I'll sit down and I'll have the papers properly. I won't be looking on my phone for stuff. I'll sit with the papers and I'll sit and read them. And I said, so that in itself is like, and yeah, but then you're like, oh,
horoscopes
shit,
and that, yeah?
Yeah, horoscopes.
weather in Madrid.
No, horoscopes, or the Sudoku puzzle. But it's so you catch up on it there, I guess. Yeah,
catch just up on the world like, imploding on a Sunday.
That'd be horrible if the world imploded on a Sunday.
I know, not on a Sunday.
Not on a
Monday,
yes.
Just as you've done the
Monday
perfect
vibe.
Roast potatoes.
You're really happy
with them. You're like, they look absolutely amazing.
If we could get taken out by a meteorite Monday, it'd be
Monday.
That's what I'm plumbing for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We also we get all of our guests to give us, if you woke up on a Sunday, what song would you love to wake up to on a Sunday?
Oh, man.
We've had some weird ones, haven't we? If you could bring it back to the realms of what we actually would like to put on a Spotify playlist, we'd love
you
forever.
I'm trying to think, actually. I really like, I like a bit of a... I don't know why this song's about Edge of Glory by Lady Gaga.
I'm on the edge of glory.
Yeah, that's
talking about the roast potatoes.
Yeah.
They're just nearly done.
Just like... going to get that perfect beef roast. Yeah, I like the Edge of Glory.
That's a good uplifting. Yeah.
Oh, it's got to be uplifting.
Bad Romance is my favourite of hers. I heard that. It's so fucking sexy, that song.
Yeah.
It was on in Topshop the other day and I thought, yeah. I really want a Bad Romance now.
It's one you can just belt out.
Sad looking security guard.
Yeah. Actually, they have cracking DJs in Topshop. Quick plug.
They have a live DJ. I took my 16-year-old niece and she was like, oh my God.
Really? It's absolutely banging. I might come here later for drinks. I walk around with a can of G&T doing some shopping in Topshop.
Getting off to
leave. It's such an opposing view from Next.
Next is such a sorry place. My mate got fired from Next years ago for punching the manager because he said his sister was unattractive.
Really?
Yeah. I haven't thought about that for years.
My nan was the longest ever employee at Next, I think.
Really?
The oldest, something
what?
Like that. She worked at Next till she was, I think she told them she was 10 years younger. They thought she was 10 years younger.
Amazing.
She does look
incredible.
Oh, yeah, she looks
Did
great.
She get like a big present?
She's got 50% off for life.
Wow.
Yeah, but who wants to buy anything from Next anymore?
I think that your
that's our sponsorship out the window.
I don't know your name.
I think the moment that Joan Rance left Next.
Yeah. Because now, I don't really go into Next much, but it seems whenever I do go, it's a place where the shopping assistant will come up and always greet you with like a...
Yeah.
It's like such a big sigh of like, oh, this is so shit.
Yeah.
It's just a bit depressing. Yeah.
Next!
It's
the different ways you can say it.
Tom, you've been an absolute joy.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a real roller coaster.
Oh, we love
therapy.
We love going off
lovely.
On a tangent. Absolutely love it, mate. Enjoy your next Sunday.
Enjoy. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Come by Sunday.